I want to take a moment or two to reflect and on what's been a wonderful 4 years for Sue and myself. Hope it's been okay for you as well. We love being part of this community. We love being part of a community that worships like we worship this morning. We love being part of a community that has a desire to look outside itself, to reach the broken, the lost, to help Whitney to flourish. And we're truly grateful to God that he called us here. I also did want to let you know that later this year, I'm going to be taking a sabbatical for 3 months, June, July, and August. In the Church of England, you're allowed to take a sabbatical every 10 years. It used to be 7 years, but they've extended it. Every 10 years. I recognise it's a privilege, and I'm grateful to the Bishop and to the PCC for agreeing that it's the right time for me to take a period of study, period of time away from church ministry to study, to retreat, and to have some time relaxing with Sue and the boys as well, and we're looking forward to that. I will also be 50 in May. I know, unbelievable, isn't it? Don't look a day over 48. But I feel it's an appropriate time to stop, to pray about the next 50 years and all that God's going to do. And I'll share some more about exactly what I'll be doing on the sabbatical at the APCM. But as it's becoming public, I did want people to know. While I'm away, everything will carry on as normal. We have, probably better than normal, we have a fantastic team, a wonderful staff team, some great lay ministers like Ian, as well as probably more retired clergy than any other church in the country. So I know I'll be leaving things in safe hands, and then I'll return in September, refreshed, re-energised, more visions, more ideas. Don't you worry. In other news, President Trump is now the leader of the free world, apparently. I don't know about you, but I've sort of watched this with a mixture of amusement and horror at the same time. Maybe that was just me. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. The thing is, when you elevate celebrity as highly as Western society has over the past few years, when you elevate sound bites over substance, and indeed over truth, then it's not surprising when celebrities become leaders. They don't have to be deep. They don't have to even tell the truth. They just have to be polished. And I think we've witnessed that. Nobody really knows what Donald Trump is intending to do, but he's had a number of great slogans that have worked for him. In a few weeks' time in this series, I'm going to be talking about reading the signs of the times, and I may say some more then. But the truth is, I don't know what the future holds, but I do know the one who holds the future, and it's not Donald Trump. I don't know what the future holds, but I know the one who holds the future. And today we're looking at a series with conviction in a culture of compromise. We're looking at Daniel chapter 3, and we're talking about where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? Now, I didn't plan this to tie in with the inauguration, but it sort of fits as we look at leadership and obsession with power. Daniel 3, if I could have the first slide up, please. The start of Daniel 3, verses 1 to 7, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold. And so what you've got here in this, at the start of Daniel 3, if you might want to follow it in the Bible, if you have a Bible or in front of you, in Daniel 3, you've got King Nebuchadnezzar. He's made an image of gold, 60 cubits high, 6 cubits wide, and set it on the plain of Dura. He summoned all the governors, the advisors, the treasurers. They've all got to come and they've got to worship this image. Whenever the herald proclaims, they've got to worship the image. As soon as they hear the sound of the horn, they've got to fall down and worship the image, this golden image. And Nebuchadnezzar is just part of a long line of people who believe themselves to be God and demand that the world bow down to them. One classic definition of sin is life curved in on itself. Life curved in on itself. Sin is the self-centered view of life, whereas its opposite, love, is an other-centered view of life. Love is that other-centered view, sin the self-centered one. And sin causes us to weigh everything in terms of its effect on us. How was I treated? What do people think of me? What am I going to get out of this? How do I advance my interests? And what I'm about to share, I read as I was researching this sermon. It was written ages ago. It's not is written in a response to anything that's happened in the world lately, but you may raise an eyebrow. When this self-centered sin attitude is not suppressed in us, it's not fought against, but is rather given full rein in a person's life, it becomes pathological. Psychiatrists these days talk about narcissistic personality disorder, a disorder in which a person has a grossly inflated view of their self-importance. Narcissists are people who have an excessive need for admiration. They have to put their name on everything. Like Nebuchadnezzar, they build gigantic monuments to themselves. They have no regard for other people's feelings. They lack empathy. They can crush someone else without giving it a moment's thought. Narcissists have an inflated sense of entitlement. Everyone owes me. Of course I should get the lion's share of everything. If we're dividing up our parents' estate, of course I should get 90%. We're dividing up credit on a project that a team worked on, of course I should get all the credit. And one place that you really see narcissism play out is that narcissists are incredibly thin-skinned. They can't handle any opposition or any criticism at all without flying into a rage. Have you ever met anyone who constantly needs to be praised, who steps on people's feelings without any sense of regret? Have you ever met someone who will never apologize under any circumstances, never back down, who believes themselves entitled to more money than anyone else, more credit than anyone else, more women or men than anyone else? Their name has to be attached to everything. Someone who can't handle criticism without rage. That was Nebuchadnezzar. And there are others in our world like that as well. Nebuchadnezzar was a narcissist. He'd built this statue, which in our measurement would be 27 meters, or 88 feet in old money, high. Huge statue. Now, we don't know if the statue was of him or was of his gods, but we know it was a big statement statue. Worship me or worship my gods. The interesting thing is that he's built this statue, and yet at the end of Daniel 2, which Rich spoke to us about last week, we have this in verse 46. The next slide, please. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery to me." So at the end of chapter 2 in Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar has recognized that God is the God of gods, the Lord of lords. But then what's gone on? He started thinking to himself, you know, the future doesn't have to unfold the way that Daniel's God says. It will unfold. I can bend the future to my will. There doesn't have to be a statue made of gold, silver, bronze, iron, or clay. There doesn't have to be a succession of kingdoms. I can make my kingdom last forever. After all, I'm the head of gold. So I'm going to make a gigantic statue entirely out of gold that will last forever. Folks, you don't lack faith when you feel flat as you pray. I occasionally find I'm praying for something and really struggling to believe my prayers will come true. We don't even lack faith when we can't imagine how a certain outcome could even come about. You'll often hear me say, Lord, do more than we ask or imagine. That's because sometimes I struggle to imagine God answering my prayers. A lack of faith is not a lack of feeling. It's not a lack of imagination. What it is what Nebuchadnezzar showed. Because despite bowing to acknowledge the Lord, end of chapter 2, bows down to acknowledge the Lord, he demonstrates a lack of faith when he chose to try to conform God's will to his desires, rather than to conform his desires to God's will. See the difference? Making God in my image. Making God in my image. A lack of faith is that attempt to conform God's will to our desires. It's not just Nebuchadnezzar who does this, rather than our desires to God's will. We try and make God fit what we want. The heart of Nebuchadnezzar's lack of faith is he's not seeking God's will. He's not looking to be obedient. He's looking for God to agree with the decisions that he's made, to agree with his desires regardless of his actions. And sadly, I see a lot of this in the church in general and in Christians, where people try to conform God's will to their desires. I think it was exemplified in the American election. People twist theology and the Bible to justify their actions. God says that there are certain things he hates. He says that clearly in the Bible, that there are certain things he hates. But we say, I can still enjoy God's blessing on my life, even if I go ahead and do what God hates, suppressing the poor or otherwise. I can ignore God and ignore God's will, and my life will still go well. There was a 17th century theologian named Pierre Nicole, I think I've got this quote, and he says this: not being willing to render their actions to conform to the laws of God, people have endeavoured to render laws of God to conform to their actions. Nebuchadnezzar's attitude is about trying to make God fit with what he wants. And it's the polar opposite of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So if you look in, if we could have verse 8 up. Some astrologers came forward. They denounced the Jews. They said to Nebuchadnezzar, may the king live forever. Your majesty's issued a decree. They talk about the decree. They say people have got to fall down. And yet there are some Jews, verse 12, who have you set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Remember, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego had been put in power in Babylon. And they pay no attention to you. This is jealousy. This is someone trying to get someone else out of a job. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. Furious with rage, says verse 13. Furious with rage. A narcissistic reaction. Furious with rage. Nebuchadnezzar summons Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. And they're brought before him, and they say, and he says to them, is it true that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now when you hear the music, you will fall and worship the image I made. And if you do, very good. But if you do not worship it, you'll be thrown into a blazing furnace. And then there's this line. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it. And he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Boom. Ah, so cool. Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, they're threatened with imminent and certain death. And they say, nah, we're not going to conform. We're not going to bow down. We're not going to do what you're telling us to do. Because we believe in God. And we believe God will be with us and he'll be there. They've drawn a line. They're not going to conform. Someone who has life and who has the power of life and death over them. And they said, no, the only person we conform to is God. It's a non-negotiable for them. What is it for you? What is the line in the sand that you will not cross? Do you try and move that line? So that line in the sand that actually, you know, God says, don't cross this. You try and pull it back here. Well, could it be just, could we move it a bit or push it away? In relationships, if we're single and you're wanting a relationship, do you have a line that you're not going to cross? A standard that you're going to say, this is it. This is what I believe God says about relationships. And this is what I'm going to look for in my relationship. In business, where do you draw the line? If the boss asks you to do something that you know isn't right, it might not be illegal, might not be immoral, but you know God wouldn't want you to do it. Where do you draw the line? When do you say to your boss, do your worst, fire me if you have to? Rich Nathan is the pastor of Columbus Vineyard, a large church in the States, and he tells this story. Years ago, when I first graduated from law school, I went to work for a law firm that had as one of their clients a man by the name of Larry Flint, the publisher of Hustler magazine. I'd compromised in taking this job. I didn't like the firm when I first began to interview, but it was the only one that had given me a really good offer, so I thought I could do this. Lacking faith in God's provision, I tried to bend reality to fit my desires. I took the job. I was a month or two into the job when one of the partners told me that Larry Flint, this client of theirs, was being sued by the publisher of another pornographic magazine, Penthouse. Two pornographers battling it out in court, and they wanted me to go through a stack of Penthouse magazines and dig up dirt about this rival publisher. There was an empty office and a stack of pornography that they wanted me to go through it. Where do you draw the line? I was fresh out of law school. We'd just bought a house. My wife was 6 months pregnant. She'd just quit her job. We were living on my income alone. I looked at that stack of magazines and I thought to myself, Lord, I should not be here in the first place. But this far is too far. I can't go through those magazines. So I told one of the other attorneys I couldn't do it. I tried to offer a compromise. I'd help out in other aspects of the case. The next day, I was called into the managing partner's office and fired on the spot. He said, "We can't have someone working here with your kind of moral reservations." And I was out of work for 6 months. Sometimes God does deliver and sometimes God does not deliver. I have no doubt that God laid a foundation in my life during those 6 months of unemployment, a foundation upon which I was able to do ministry with integrity, to stop trying to bend God's will to fit my desires, but instead to bend my desires to fit God's will. Faith is a commitment to do God's will regardless. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had a faith that said, "This is our line, we are not going to cross it." If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. They did not know what was going to happen. They trusted, they believed, but they didn't know. But they knew God was faithful. They knew God was with them. And they weren't going to cross a line, even if it led to death. In the words of Oswald Chambers, famous words, they smilingly washed their hands of the consequences. Whatever happens, happens. Whatever happens, happens. I will not cross the line. In verse 19, sure enough, Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times hotter than usual, commanded the strongest soldiers in the army to tie them up and throw them into the blazing furnace. So they were bound up, thrown into the furnace. The fire was so hot that the soldiers who took them there were killed, which I felt was a little unfair on the soldiers. And they fell into the blazing furnace. And then he leaps to his feet in amazement, Nebuchadnezzar, and says to his advisors, "Weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, your majesty. Look, I see 4 men walking in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods." See, what's really interesting is the 3 weren't delivered from the fire, they were delivered in the fire. They weren't delivered from the fire, they were delivered in the fire. And sometimes we ask God to deliver us from something, and we then find ourselves in it, and it's only when we're in it that God delivers us. They're free, they're unbound, and they are not alone. There is a 4th who looks like a son of the gods. Some commentators suggest that Jesus has appeared in the fire with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We don't know that for sure. But as another commentator says, the deliverance comes about through the presence of a 4th person in their midst. The divine aid camps round those who honour God and extricates them from peril. Enters the fire himself to neutralize its capacity of harm by the presence of his superior energy. God's promise, "I will be with you," characteristically belongs to contexts of affliction and pressure. The experience of God's being with his people not only follows on their commitment to him rather than preceding it, it comes only in the furnace, not being persevered from it. God is with us. And some of us this morning may feel like we are in the furnace. God is with you, and he can bring freedom in that place. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they weren't rescued from the furnace, they were rescued in the furnace, where they discovered the presence of God with them. The reality is, history shows us, God doesn't always deliver. God doesn't always deliver. If you head into Oxford on Broad Street, there's the memorial that marks the place where the Oxford martyrs, Bishops Ridley and Latimer and Archbishop Cranmer, were burnt at the stake, burnt alive for their faith in the 1550s. That's why we have the Latimer, Ridley and Cranmer rooms in the church centre to remember them standing for their faith, dying for their faith. We pray that God will... whatever the future holds, whatever is going on in our life, God holds the future, whatever the future holds. And verse 26, Nebuchadnezzar approaches the opening of the blazing furnace. He shouts, "Come here," to Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. They come out of the fire. And then in verse 28, they're completely unscathed. "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, who sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command, and they were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God." Folks, we may not be facing the things that Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego are facing. We may not be facing a furnace. But there are folks, Christian brothers and sisters around the world who are. There are other things we're facing today where we need to know God's presence and his help in the situations we find ourselves in. And we pray. We don't know what the future holds, but we know the one who holds the future. I mentioned last week, 10 days ago, I was at the Houses of Parliament the Open Doors were launching their watch list of the 50 countries where it's hardest to be a Christian, most dangerous. There was a pastor there, I mentioned Pastor Aminu Sule. He's a church leader from northern Nigeria, and he talked about the violent attacks on his congregation that they've experienced at the hands of Boko Haram. In 2011, his church had 400 members. Today, there are fewer than 20. As members of his church have been killed by the militants or fled for their safety. He says, "I can't count the number of people I've buried." He also described receiving a text message from Boko Haram telling him that they were coming to kill him. But what he said, and he said all of this to the MPs, I think there were over 90 MPs present. He said all of this to them, and he said, "I am from Yobe," which is the area, "and I'm going back to Yobe." It was almost like, this is my line in the sand. This is where I'm going to witness to the love and power of God. And then there was Pastor Daniel. And Pastor Daniel wasn't able to make it because of the snow in Istanbul. They couldn't fly out. But he's a church leader in Erbil, Iraq, and he appeared via video. And just before Christmas, Open Doors asked us to send him some messages. He wrote to a number of church leaders, I think five of us, just sent messages to him. And here's a picture of Pastor Daniel, receiving the messages from church leaders here. Pastor Daniel says this, my message, you can just about see. "But we are being killed every day and counted as lambs for the slaughter. We have unlimited stories of persecution." He described how his family were forced to flee Baghdad on his 16th birthday when they were threatened by Al-Qaeda. "My gift for my 16th birthday was crying all the way and escaping and looking for a safe place." Now, his church in Erbil is one of Open Door's local partners and has been supporting thousands of displaced families. And he emphasized the importance, the role the church has to play in building reconciliation. Folks, we aren't facing that level of persecution, that level of challenge. But There's three things that may be going on for us this morning. The first is, you know, in terms of thinking through your challenges, what are the challenges you're facing this morning? Where are you being tempted to compromise? Tempted in work, relationships, finance. Remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Remember verse 17 and 18. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up. So my three things to finish are this. Are you conforming to God's will? Or are you asking him to conform to yours? And there are probably times in all of our lives where we get that wrong. And so I'd encourage you to think about, well, where in your life might you maybe be asking, whether it's finance, whether it's work, relationship, asking God to conform to your will rather than conforming to his. The second is that Jesus is with you, and he will be with you. He'll be with you in the fire. If you're facing a furnace, if you're in a place where you have to take a stand, Jesus is with you. And the third thing is this. Let us declare that whatever the future holds, we will not serve the gods or worship the golden images of this world, but we will continue to look to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the one true God who is able to rescue us whatever we face. Whatever we face. Would you stand as I pray for us?